This is All In. I'm Miriam Sobe. The debate around critical race theory among parents and educators has been a hot topic for some across the country and here in Indiana. Today, we hope to learn and understand more about critical race theory, why it's been on the minds of lawmakers and parents, and what it means for schools and educators in the state. With us now is Eric Weddle, managing editor for WFYI's Education Desk, here to help us find out what's been going on in Indiana schools and how school leaders are addressing this issue. Welcome to the program, Eric.
Thanks a lot for having me.
Let's start with learning more about this debate on critical race theory. How long has this been going on in Indiana, or is this something totally new?
Yeah, this is something new. I mean, Indiana has been the focus of debates on classroom teaching and curriculum in the past, but the debate right now on how to teach, you know, race and racism in public schools and initiatives around inclusion and diversity is something new.
Mm-hmm. And do you know when or how this all began here in Indiana in particular?
Yeah. I mean, I can't like pinpoint where we first saw this issue erupt into the public in Indiana. And there are school districts and counties where it's become a focus, such as Hamilton County, north of Indianapolis. But before this debate came here, you know, it was playing out in other states on cable news and talk radio. And, you know, we've seen about 20 states so far have introduced bills that would restrict how teachers discuss racism, raise controversial issues in the classroom. And eight states and mostly Republican state houses, you know, have passed bills so far this year. There's the news site Education Week, you know, reported that, you know, critical race theory, you know, the focus on that began about a year ago with some conservative groups, you know, in wake of the social justice protest that we saw. And then that kind of caught the attention of President Trump, who signed an executive order about it that has since been repealed by President Biden. But some of that language, you know, ended up in these bills that we're seeing. And so as that's played out, you know, it's made its way here into Indiana.
Yeah, I was wondering if any of this was tied to the social justice movements, because it seemed like there were other types of bills that started to get passed around that time, like anti-protest and stuff like that. So is this kind of following in that same line?
I mean, it seems to be. I mean, from what, you know, some of the research I've done and what I've read, other, you know, like I mentioned, Education Week, since been great reporting on the background on this and how it's kind of come, you know, into play. You know, it seems like it's kind of followed last summer. There's been just an increase in the interest in different kinds of special interest groups and then groups who are lobbying lawmakers to pass bills around different types of topics that are being discussed in schools.
And what are some of the things that you're hearing common concerns from parents when it comes to critical race theory being taught in Indiana schools, if there are any concerns?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you'll maybe discuss this later, you know, in the show, but I think it's clear to say, you know, critical race theory, you know, for what it is, that's not really, I don't think, what we're seeing people protest in Indiana. You know, critical race theory is more of an academic framework to discuss and study how people of color have been impacted by different types of perceptions on race, inequity, structural racism. So I think it's clear to say this is also a political battle, right? So critical race theory, from my reporting and from what I've seen talking to people on the ground, is it's kind of become a catch-all phrase for all types of issues, you know, by opponents, and also, you know, for discussions about diversity and inclusion. And so the parents I've spoken to, you know, told me that they kind of believe that there's a discussion around current events in the classroom, like the election that we just went through, Black Lives Matter movement, has just kind of gone too far. And they believe teachers are injecting too much of their beliefs on these issues into the classroom, you know, and they're talking about history and history of racism in a way that they don't either agree with or think that should be, you know, presented in that way to their children. And, you know, from that, you know, you hear the parents, they want to have like more control of what's being taught in the classroom now. And, you know, even the state-funded public schools they attend, they want to have more control over what's happening. And I've talked to some parents, you know, who say they want to even opt their kids out of some classes or some class times, you know, if they aren't clear what will be discussed on these topics.
I wonder if some of the discomfort from parents comes from the fact that, like, so many of us who've grown up never had really critical conversations about these topics. You know, you learn the basics, but when you get into it, it's a lot deeper. It's a lot more painful to understand.
Yeah, I mean, in my experience the past few years in the classroom, I think teachers have actually really embraced this time that we're going through, just because it's kind of social media, the interaction everyone has, I think they're finding students more engaged on all topics and in all manners, and it's creating a lot richer conversations and teaching and learning in the classroom.
Sure. And how do educators feel about this? I mean, it affects definitely the way that they're going to structure their curriculum.
Yeah, I mean, in states, you know, where laws have passed, you know, you hear teachers are worried about, you know, how their teaching is going to be impacted. You know, who's going to decide what they can or not can or cannot say or teach in class based on the laws of their state? You know, how do you discuss current events when it is? I mean, right now, so much is divisive in general. You know, you look online, look on TV, just the discourse from your local city council, you know, up to the you know, to Washington, D.C. is divisive. So I think you're seeing a lot of reporting around teachers are just wondering, like, what's it going to look like when I go back to school? And these laws are brand new. And they don't want to get in trouble. They don't want to become like a viral moment. You know, I think there's a lot of concern among educators right now.
Have you heard from educators that feel passionate one way or the other about this topic?
I mean, I think in Indiana, I mean, it's more so for people just seeing what's going to happen here. You know, I mean, we don't have any laws being passed here. I know there's lawmakers that have interested in that. There's been some comments made, but I think it'll kind of depend what happens here. But I think they're already starting to have those same concerns I just mentioned.
Right, right. And when it comes to school board meetings, have you seen any movement on this, any discussion there?
Well, you know, last week or so, recently, you know, but the state board school board meeting. And I think a lot of people expected that to come to that meeting. It did not. There was no public comment there or really any comment by anyone at the board who I don't really believe wants to get into this debate right now. But local school boards, yes. I mean, you know, this spring across Hamilton County, we've seen parents speaking out during school board meetings, sometimes for hours, at Cromwell Clay Schools, Noblesville Schools, Hamilton Southeastern, Westfield Washington Schools. And these dual school districts have faced accusations, you know, of teaching critical race theory, of also doing other things that related to social emotional learning, which has become kind of a catchphrase as well for people who are opposed to CRT. So that right now is kind of playing out in certain school districts, you know, at that level, because, you know, the school board is kind of the one, you know, who decides what's being taught, the curriculum and so forth. So you are seeing that happen there.
Well, if you have any questions or comments for the show, you can let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. We're speaking with Eric Weddle, managing editor for WFYI's Education Desk, about CRT in Indiana. So, Eric, is CRT a curriculum that is being taught in Indiana schools? Let's just clarify this for our listeners.
Right.
You know, we
right.
keep hearing so many things.
Well, yeah, I think, you know, it's not a curriculum. And like I said, you know, previously, it's more of a framework for studying or, you know, kind of like analyzing different types of history and how people of color have been impacted by that. And so there isn't a curriculum, you know, that I'm aware of. You know, Indiana does not have that either approved as part of their state approved standards. And I'm not aware of any school district, you know, that teaches the CRT framework to its students. You know, I'm not saying that there is not any in the state. I'm not aware of any. And you are hearing a lot of school districts that are now coming out and announcing that they don't teach it. You know,
right.
I mentioned Hamilton County schools have all come out and said that. Indianapolis Public School District, which has taken kind of a public stance on being a anti-racist school district. Their leader came out recently, you know, and said that that is not part of their curriculum.
Is there a reason why it's being presented as this? I mean, it seems like there's a lot of misinformation.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's become a catch-all phrase, and I think it's, you know, it's become more of a political issue than like an education policy issue. And I think that's why a lot of maybe education journalists, you know, across the country and maybe political reporters have struggled on how to like report on this. You know, we had Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita put out a document, you know, called the Parents' Bill of Rights that spends a lot of pages on CRT. And I think he adds a lot of terms, other terms into CRT as being related or part of it, like culturally responsive teaching. And I think that, you know, people hear that term, like a term like that used, you know, there's a number of charter schools, you know, that I know in Indianapolis that kind of use that as a kind of a framework for how they teach to their students. And I think that's kind of like misleading people into thinking that this is like kind of a curriculum plan that includes these different things that is being directly taught to students. When I think it's kind of, you know, CRT is more of, I think, a word now being used for an array of topics that mm-hmm. people are opposed to.
Mm-hmm. So it's just becoming this sort of phrase that's trying to give people panic in some ways.
Yeah, I mean, I think it becomes hard to have a conversation about it when I think there maybe is disagreement on what it means. You know, I mean, it has a definition, but then I think the way different people use the term, it leads to, you know, to just misinformation. And then it's hard to have, like, I think, a debate when people aren't using the same terms in the same way.
Right. And when it comes to students, has there been any conversation with them to hear about their thoughts about, you know, being taught from the framework of critical race theory?
Yeah, you know, I mean, right now I'm not really able to, you know, just kind of give my sense on like how students feel. You know, I've heard from parents, you know, who say their high schoolers are troubled, you know, by some of the more current event teaching going on in class about, you know, racism and its history in America. But going back to Hamilton County, you know, we've had students coming out who are, you know, kind of who are supporting the teaching of these topics, supporting the teaching of diversity and inclusion around that. So I think, you know, you probably have people on both sides, you know. I think it kind of, like any kind of political debate, you know, there's all kinds of ideas on it. But I think it goes back to, you know, what are we really debating over? I think is what Indiana is going to face very soon.
Mm-hmm. Well, before we wrap up here, I'm curious about teachers in Indiana, specifically like in public schools. How much choice do they have individually for what kind of curriculum they put together for the classroom? Or is there like a standard?
Right. Yeah. And I think that's what you're hearing. I mean, that's what I've been hearing from parents who are upset about this. You know, they're wanting to know, like, they're asking, like, how does this work? And this is some basic information, which is great for everyone to know. You know, but the state law makes the State Board of Education responsible for the standards. And that's like the level of what a student should learn, attain in each subject and grade, right? So that's like, at what grade should you be learning certain topics of math, you know, or history. So how that's actually taught is the curriculum. And that's like the textbooks used and like what lessons are planned. And that's on the local school district level and the school boards, you know? And then you kind of get into like maybe a singular school, you know, maybe the history teacher in a school is kind of designing the curriculum for multiple high school students or multiple high school classes while following those state standards. So it is going to look differently school to school, school district to school district as they follow the state approved standards.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us and giving us all that insight. Eric Weddle, managing editor for WFYI's Education Desk. We'll be back after a quick break. We're continuing our discussion on critical race theory, what it is and what the debate around it looks like in Indiana. If you have any questions or comments for the show, let us know on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Soap. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam Soap. Lawmakers in several states have been debating the topic of critical race theory being taught in schools. But what is it and how is it being taught in schools, if at all? We heard a little bit about it before the break, and now we're continuing the discussion with Representative Reagan Hatcher, Indiana State Representative for District 3, as well as George Middleton, mental health counseling and diversity consultant at George Middleton Consulting. If you have any questions or comments, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or you can leave us a voicemail, including your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. You can also send us a voice message through our free smartphone app. It's called All In Vox Pop. Just search for All In Vox Pop on your phone's app store. Send us your question or comment, and we'll try to get it onto the show. Welcome, George and Representative Hatcher. Thank you so much to both of you for joining us today. George, I'll start with you. We heard a little bit in the first segment about critical race theory, but can you tell us exactly what is it?
Critical race theory is an attempt to look at, race ideology in an intellectual manner, to assess the impact of race ideology on legal systems within the country. It does not teach race ideology. It is a theory, a lens, a tool with which to examine impacts on society from the ideology of race.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was wondering if it's more of a lens of the way that you would look through things. So where did this come from?
The critical race theory is a branch off of critical legal theory. And critical legal theory attempted to examine the same impacts on society but it lumped racism and race within that, much like what diversity and inclusion does. It tries to address issues of discrimination across socioeconomic, gender, religious, and lumps race into that. And race is its own unique entity. And so that is why the critical race theory was a break off of that, to specifically address the ideology of race.
Yeah, that's very deep. Like, I'm going to have to really absorb all of this, because it just seems like there's so much information that's put out there, and it's a lot deeper than what we're basically giving it space for.
Correct.
Well, Representative Hatcher, why do you think there's so much confusion about this topic?
Hi. Yes, thank you for having me on. I certainly agree with your guest about the definition of critical race theory, and I think where we're kind of blurring the line is between the history of African Americans before they came to America and once they arrived here in America, and the impact of the 400 years of slavery that African Americans had to live through, what that impact had on today. And so I think what critical race theory really does is it tells us how every aspect of life is the way it is because of that history that African Americans suffered for 400 odd years. The really interesting thing to me about critical race theory is when it was developed and how it was developed. And basically, the origins kind of go back to Derrick Bell, who was a professor at Harvard he was there for a while, but this came up around the 1970s, early 1980s, because there was a lack of diversity at Harvard. Mm-hmm. And so the students got together. Derrick Bell was a very progressive professor at Harvard University, and they kind of started this movement about why critical race theory should be taught in, and I think at that point, you know, it would have been in the law school, but I think that the difference is we're trying to merge Black history with the theory of how Black history impacts us today.
And is that more complicated for folks to be able to separate the two, or should they be separated?
Well, I think that, first off, the history of African Americans in the United States and pre-United States are all facts. And
right.
We can go back and take a look and we can say this happened at this time. The first slave boat came over in the early 1600s, or as recorded, in the early 1600s. So we can look at those things and we can see them as facts. And so that's easy to teach. It's history. It's factual. It's something that you can write down in a book and it can be checked in different ways. What critical race theory does, it takes a look at how that history affects us today. So we go back to systematic racism and institutional racism and those kinds of ideas that we know are there. We know that racism exists. I guess we're trying to figure out why and how it exists and how to change it. One of the things that was so disappointing is that, first off, Indiana, I went to public school here in Gary, Indiana. And one thing about Indiana is that we don't teach critical race theory anyway. Mm-hmm. But if we did teach it, if people understood why urban areas look different than suburban areas, or why Carmel looks different from inner city Indianapolis, then if we understood that critical race theory, we would understand why those things happen the way that they do. And the more that we can teach people about why things are the way they are, I think the better race relations would become.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds reasonable to me, and I don't want to make this all about my opinion, but George, in an article in Education Week, Stephen Sawchuk writes, quote, "The events of the last decade have increased public awareness about things like housing segregation, the impact of criminal justice policy in the 90s, and the legacy of enslavement on Black Americans. But there is much less consensus on what the government's role should be in righting these past wrongs. Add children and schooling into the mix, and it becomes especially volatile. What are your thoughts on that, George?
Yes, I would agree. That's the problem that speaks of the definition of insanity. And we're taking the problem and using elements of the problem to try to fix the problem. And we just end up getting the same results. Sometimes we'll kick the can down the road and we'll feel like we've got a short win, but it's just a short respite from the storm until the next social situation. What has to happen in the work that I do is teach companies, teach organizations, teach people who provide service to the community how to operate outside of the paradigm of race. Mm-hmm. Because operating inside of it, coming from either the identity of Black or the identity of white, you're only going to get a racial outcome.
Well, to elaborate a little bit more on that, George, I know you've written about the difference between critical race theory and racial ideologies. Can you explain that for our audience?
So when the mania about CRT being taught in schools was becoming promoted, they were attacking CRT as if that was the original sin, when actually it's race ideology that's the original sin, okay? Again, CRT is a theory.
Right.
It's not an ideology. So they're trying to, as what Mr. Widow had said earlier, they use CRT as the catch-all for the thing that parents, politicians, and other leaders are having issues with. Because there is an issue, but they're attacking the wrong piece. So in order to address this effectively, you have to know that difference between critical race theory and race ideology. And race ideology is about a system based on physical experiences and the social meaning associated with those physical appearances. And this was created in the 1600s. And often today, when we talk about race, we're not consciously thinking about that ideology. So people are surprised when someone's offended or upset or angry, because often what's happening is more subconscious than it is conscious. But we all know what Black means. We know what white means. Now, is it a conscious meaning within the average individual? Or are we today walking around constantly saying, I'm better than you, I'm lower than you? No, we're not doing that. But when you take on the identity of race ideology, Black or white, you are subconsciously impacted by that.
That makes sense. I mean, just to even not realize it, but because you've already adopted those labels to yourself and others, perhaps. And when it comes to these topics, I mean, how would you be able to deconstruct and have conversations about it? I mean, it just seems like if people aren't even willing to listen.
My approach right now is to try to collaborate with service providers, because this is a huge, huge problem. And we have to address it in a systemic fashion. So the goal is to address education system, law enforcement system, political systems, and first begin at the top and be educated on what race is. So for example, in our school system, CRT is not being taught anywhere in the country in K-12. Fact. Mm-hmm. CRT, our students are not being educated about race, as Representative Hatcher mentioned, as a suggestion, because it's a very, very plausible suggestion to have an intentional educational arm to addressing race specifically, because our kids are not being educated on that. are adults. Not even the teachers themselves are not educated on race. Mm-hmm. And then lastly, most importantly, which is what the real problem is that our students are being reinforced in race ideology on a daily basis. Mm. And that's where the area of redress really needs to be a focus.
Right, right. Well, I definitely want to talk a little bit more about that. But first, Representative Hatcher, when we talk about the CRT debate and when it began, when did you see it starting to be discussed here in Indiana?
Well, in our legislative session, this past session, we did not discuss it at all. There was no discussion about critical race theory. But we did have some race conversations this last session. And I think what happened is, and I think a lot of it does have to do with communication and what people feel when you begin to talk about race in those kinds of settings. So, for example, we had a bill come up that was obviously discriminatory to those neighborhoods that were minority neighborhoods or cities in the state of Indiana. And so when I got up and said, hey, this is discriminatory and impacts the people in Gary, Indiana, more than it would impact many of the rural areas in Indiana, then there was offense taken to that. And so I think the first step is, because you call something discriminatory doesn't necessarily mean you're calling the author racist, but I think the issue is kind of that they don't take into consideration how certain legislation may impact urban areas more than rural areas. Mm-hmm. And it becomes a very heated discussion because there's a lot of offense taken. And for us on our side of it, and I just mean the Gary, Indiana side of it, we're upset because it obviously is going to impact us in a negative way. And, you know, as we try to communicate that and we're shot down because the whole conversation just breaks down when you use the word discriminatory, because then they say, hey, you're being racist. And then it gets into the race argument instead of into the how will this impact my neighborhood argument. Mm-hmm. And so that critical race theory is something that I think very around about. We ended up talking about this legislative session, not being taught in schools, but just that legislators need to understand that there is systematic racism in a systematic way of thinking that is racist or is discriminatory to certain areas that's inside of much of the legislation that passes through the state house in Indianapolis. And just being able to say that where you can explain it without it being taken as a negative is very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm imagining just having these conversations, if folks aren't open to hearing what's being said and are just reactionary, it's very tough to get anything done.
Exactly. And so instead of talking about the impact of the bill, we end up talking about, oh, the Black Legislative Caucus is, trying to promote something that is pro-Black, instead of saying, hey, the Black Legislative Caucus is trying to promote something that won't negatively impact their community.
Right.
So it's kind of the way it's thought about and talked about. And, mm-hmm. and that's why, you know, I think critical race theory is something that everybody needs to learn, because that way it starts to change the mindset of how we think about these things, not mm-hmm. just at the state house, but in the courtroom or in the jails or in the classroom.
Right. Well, before we get to a break, I'm curious, shouldn't communities of color be the ones consulted or coming up with how things should be taught in schools when it comes to things that have affected them?
That's a really good question. And here in Gary, we are really under state control. Our education, our school district is under state control right now. We are working to be out by the next year, but because of that, people who are in Indianapolis and at the state house get to make those kind of determinative decisions on our behalf. And so we are really stuck in a quandary where we can't even make the decisions at this point to do that without an approval from the state.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're definitely going to get more into this discussion. We're going to take a quick break. We're talking about critical race theory, what it aims to teach, and why some are trying to ban it in schools across the country. If you have any questions or comments for our guests today, you can find us on Facebook or Twitter at All in Indiana. You can also leave us a voicemail at 866-476-3881. That's 866-476-3881. I'm Miriam Sobel. We'll be back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Miriam. So back now to our discussion on critical race theory and the debate in Indiana as well as across the country. If you have any questions or comments for the program, you can find us on Facebook and Twitter at All In Indiana, or leave us a short voicemail with your first name and where you're calling from at 866-476-3881. We're joined once again by Representative Reagan Hatcher, Indiana State Representative for District 3, as well as George Middleton, mental health counseling and diversity consultant at George Middleton Consulting. George, what are some of the common things that you've heard from folks who are opposed to CRT, or even from parents?
Much like what issues that Representative Hatcher mentioned in trying to discuss racial issues. She mentioned that when they're trying to discuss CRT, they can't get past their own personal emotions to address it, because everyone is coming from either the identity of Black or the identity of white. And one of the primary issues with CRT is that for those who identify as white, they believe that it's teaching that white people are bad people, that white people are inherently racist. And so when you try to have a legitimate, productive discussion on an issue that affects the community, because people are quick to be take it personal, whether it's from a Black perspective or white perspective, it's a deal breaker. You can't move forward because people are entrenched into the emotionality that race ideology uses to keep people in their camps. And so as a person of white identity, the minute you say discrimination, automatically they're going into defense mode. I didn't do it. It wasn't my people. I'm not racist. And once it goes there, the conversation is dead in water.
Mm-hmm. And then what are the solutions to something like that? Like, how would you approach a conversation where people are shutting down? Is there a different way to discuss it to have people put their guard down a little bit?
Yes, there is. And this is the process that I teach. You have to start with yourself first. You have to be educated about race. So, for example, there's the average person believes that race is a legitimate, scientifically and genetically valid concept. Critical race theory is based on the premise that race is a social construct, meaning that it's just an idea made up in someone's mind for social purposes. However, we've taken this idea that originated in the 1600s, and we have made it integral in all of our systems of service, policies, and practices. So for all intents and purposes, the outcomes of the ideology are reality, but it's based on a false belief system based on assumptions of what people, of the way people look, tied to cognitive ability. So it's all messed up. It's all jacked up. And then we're trying to make sense out of something that is totally insensible. So the first solution, the first step in the solution is to begin to do your own work. That's why I'm approaching race ideology from a mental health perspective. And when I say mental health, it's important for people to know that there's a difference between mental illness and mental health. So just like you go to the gym to work on your physical health, you need to have places where you can go to work on your mental health. And that's what I'm promoting. And race ideology can really put a damper on your mental health, the way that you perceive yourself, the way you perceive others, how you treat others, how you write service for others, how you respond to others. So becoming more emotionally intelligent and aware of how your personal relationship is with race ideology so that you can make more effective decisions when you enter into a discussion or when you're going to write some political policy like the Parents' Bill of Rights, you know, that you're coming from an informed perspective rather than an emotional, racially uneducated perspective.
Right, right. And I'm fascinated by the work that you do. I think we could have a whole discussion just about the mental health aspect and the mental health industry itself and the things that clinicians could probably use with clients that would help things. And I'm also thinking about I was thinking when you were talking about race as a social construct, just about, you know, the census or anytime you have to fill something out and it's like you put your race and it's and how do you even quantify that if you're someone like myself of a mixed racial background and it's like you're not represented on there and then you just feel like, where do I fit in?
Exactly. It's a nonsensical concept that is used purely for economic purposes. Because this is not about your morals, about your faith, you know, your character. This is economically and politically driven. Mm-hmm. And we often get caught up in the emotion of the conversation. Meanwhile, the economic vehicle, the economic chain from the outcomes of this ideology continue. And there is money, you know, race ideology is a moneymaker. And we don't discuss that aspect of it.
Right.
And so we're viewing it more about personal and being nice to each other and saying nice things and kumbaya. That's totally beside the point.
Right.
You know,
right.
We have the right to be, we have the right to like each other or not like each other for whatever reason we want to. We have the right to do that. But what we're talking about is the rights as it comes to providing services from a taxpayer standpoint.
Right, right. Well, we have a listener voicemail.
And there's one other thing that you mentioned prior section, asking if communities of color should be consulted. There is a misnomer that black people, quote unquote, are experts on racism, and white people, quote unquote, aren't. Mm-hmm. Neither identity is equipped to effectively address issues of race in an objective manner. Mm. It's just two different experiences. There is a lot of research out there that proves that those who identify as white have mental health issues also. It just demonstrates differently because they are afforded access to resources to help disguise those issues. But both sides are mentally impacted, and both sides should be equally vested in finding an objective solution.
Right, right. That's a great point. Thank you for sharing that. Well, we do have a listener voicemail from Wendy who has a question about supporting legislators at the State House. Let's take a listen.
Hi, my name is Wendy. I'm calling from Evansville, and I have a question for members of the Black Legislative Caucus on the show about how white constituents of white legislators at the State House can support their calls for anti-discriminatory training for white legislators after the very problematic and difficult legislative session that we had last year. Thank you.
All right, Representative Hatcher.
Yeah, and I want to thank Wendy for that question. One of the things that is really awesome about being at the State House is when these kind of issues come up, it's not like just Black people from Indiana come out to support us. We certainly have a ton of white supporters who want to see Indiana be a less or non-discriminatory state. And so we get their help often in these pushes and in this movement towards making sure legislation doesn't affect different areas in different ways. And so what we try to do is not only to call it out when we see it in certain legislation that is put in front of us to vote for, but also when it comes up initially, when we are having the conversations, when we're in committee and we can see that there is some legislation that may impact certain areas differently, we try to put those things out. We try to get press releases out and those things. And one of the things that constituents can certainly do from anywhere in the state of Indiana is always refer to our legislative, Black Legislative Caucus Facebook page. Because we try to post there what interesting issues will be coming up. We have town halls that have turned virtual now that we try to get out and try to look forward and see what's going to happen in the upcoming session. I think last session was just so bad because we didn't have somebody say, you know, this is discriminatory legislation. We had literally members of the legislature get up and walk out and get angry because they felt like we were calling them racist. And so, and there were literally fights going on. I mean, it got so bad last session. It was so hostile. None of us want to go through that again. But to not go through that, to not be able to speak up when these kind of issues come up. And I think that was the push. We shouldn't be saying that these things are racist, even though we know that they're racist. And I think that's where the pushback came from. And so we're not going to stop saying when legislation negatively impacts minority areas in the state of Indiana. We're going to continue to do that. And so what constituents can certainly do is be supportive of that, come out to committee meetings and testify against that kind of legislation when it comes up.
Mm-hmm. Well, speaking of that incident, it was right when I was joining this organization and I remember reading about it. And I'm just curious, George, what would the solution be to a situation like that? I mean, it sounds like it's, again, one of those times when people don't want to listen and maybe aren't understanding just how impactful what their legislation would be in a negative mm-hmm. way.
Exactly.
There's a age-old adage that I'm sure you've all heard before in conflict resolution. Attack the problem, not the person. And in race ideology, when you're addressing race issues, it always comes off personal. And there's no way to avoid it being personal if you identify by one of the two colors on the racial spectrum. So the first step that's going to need to happen is to do some introspective work on your own identity from a racial perspective. There's a question I ask when I'm doing my workshops. Are you your color or are you your culture? There's no right or wrong answer. But it's an answer designed to get people to actually think about their own thought process when it comes to identity, because your identity frames everything that you do and how you receive information coming towards you. So when you have the legislature, the issues that Representative Hatcher mentioned that happened last year, it doesn't surprise me, and it will happen again. It might happen differently, but it will be the same results no matter how you address it, as long as you continue to use the same frame of race in addressing it. You're going to get something different, you're going to do something different. And I'm really trying to emphasize as strongly as I can is that you have to think differently about race. And in order to do that, you have to become educated about race. Because anything that anybody tries to do right now without going through this process, you can predict the outcome. It's going to be short-lived at best.
Well, Representative Hatcher, when it comes to CRT, Texas passed an anti-CRT bill. Is that something that could happen in Indiana? Are you hearing any talks of that?
I have not heard anything about it yet, but it's certainly something that could happen in the state of Indiana, unfortunately. Right now, I think, especially nationwide, I think it's so important that not only every person be taught the entire history
of America, just to get the conversation started, but to also hear the statistics regarding, what happens in the courtrooms, what happens in the jail, the sentencing guidelines, what happens in urban schools versus suburban schools. And so I think it's very possible. But I just wanted to mention one of the things that's really interesting to me about the state of Indiana is that urban areas in Indiana aren't necessarily poor and rural areas aren't necessarily rich. And so it's almost, when it comes down to it, when you say, why does Gary have a school district that has been taken over, even though the average income in Gary is higher than the average income in a rural area that still has a school district that's functioning? Or why is Gary treated differently? And when I say, I only mention Gary, but it's Gary and South Bend and Fort Wayne and other areas in the state of Indianapolis. But it's so, because I understand what you're saying about Black versus white and how we look at those things and how we identify with one or the other. But really what the discussion should be about is poor versus rich and how poor people in the state of Indiana fare differently across the race. So you may have poor whites in certain areas of Indiana that have more support from the state, and you might have poor Black areas in Indiana that receive less support. And so we kind of get down to this idea of race because there's nothing else that is different besides you may have a Black area and you may have a white area. And for whatever reason, those two areas are treated differently no matter what the income in that area is. And that's what's so troubling. So when you have legislation that impacts that Black area, and let's just say it's a Black poor area versus a white poor area that doesn't impact, that's written so it won't impact that white poor area, that's when we get into these really difficult and heated discussions where there's nothing else to call it but discriminatory or racist.
Right, right.
I agree with you on that strategy. However, people are going to still come from their racial identities. And again, this is more from a subconscious perspective. So the fact that you just brought out is not what most people subconsciously believe. They associate poverty with one skin color. And
exactly.
So as a result, they're going to behave in many ways unconsciously towards that ineffective, incorrect belief. So the work first has to start with taking a step back and learning to deconstruct race ideology from your own thought process. And that is a process that I teach this process, and it's a process that is not being done anywhere. And people are trying to use race to fix race, and you just can't get there.
Right. Well, it definitely starts within each and every one of us to take a look at ourselves and to make sure that we're educating ourselves. I want to thank all our guests for taking the time today. Representative Reagan Hatcher, Indiana State Representative for District 3, and George Middleton, Mental Health Counseling and Diversity Consultant at George Middleton Consulting. Our producers, Drew Dodlin, Micah Yason, Scott Cameron is our managing editor. Adam Gross is our engineer and composed our theme song. Join us tomorrow for a show on the history of hip hop. Find us on Twitter and Facebook at All in Indiana. I'm Miriam Sobe. Thanks for listening. This is All In.